Welcome to The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening on this holiday. You have got to love America, right? On the weekend that commemorates the sacred contributions of the civil rights movement to this country's heritage. A weekend to remember words and deeds that moved this nation forward from a time of racial hatred and violence and segregation. That music is from an event at Harlem's Apollo Theater, gospel performance by Marcel Davies Lashley, part of WNYC and the Apollo Theater's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebration. And here are some of those words from Martin Luther King's Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech back in 1964.
Old systems of exploitation and oppression are passing away, and out of the wombs of the frail world, new systems of justice and equality are being born. Doors of opportunity are gradually being opened to those at the bottom of society. The shirtless and barefoot people of the land are developing a new sense of somebodiness and carving a tunnel of hope through the dark mounting of despair.
So on a weekend for remembering the heroes of the civil rights movement, our new president-elect chose to dump on one of the heroes who marched with Dr. King in Selma, Congressman John Lewis. In a trusty early morning Saturday tweet, Congressman John Lewis should spend more time on fixing and helping his district, which is in horrible shape and falling apart, not to mention crime-infested, rather than falsely complaining about the election results. All talk, 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 no action or results. Sad. Now, we should note that Lewis's district has a Ritz-Carlton hotel in it, the headquarters of Coca-Cola in it, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in it, Emory University, a crime rate well below the national average, and an unemployment rate below the national average as well. In short, I guess it's an urban hell. We should also note that Trump was reacting to some bitter comments that Congressman Lewis made during a Friday taping of Meet the Press.
I don't see this president-elect as a legitimate president.
You do not consider him a legitimate president. Why is that?
I think the Russians participated in helping this man get elected, and they helped destroy the candidacy of Hillary Clinton.
Well, the principal effect of this tweet spat was to cause all of John Lewis's books to reportedly sell out and for African-American members of Congress to speculate that the next 4 years will be more racially divided than ever before. It would appear that Trump considers Lewis something of a sacred cow like John McCain and is signaling a new attitude towards the icons of Capitol Hill. President-elect Trump did eventually make remarks about the plight of African-Americans in history, but the main point lingered. Is progress possible? Has progress over the last 8 years been enough? The most tangible area of needed reform may be in the prison population, where 2.2 million adults are in state or federal prisons. And criminal justice reform has been a top priority for the Obama administration, but has it been more than just incremental? Glenn E. Martin served 6 years in a New York state prison. Today, he's the president and founder of Just Leadership USA, an organization dedicated to cutting the U.S. correction population in half by the year 2030, which would include considering release of more than just nonviolent offenders.
The question is whether or not he created an environment for additional reform. I would argue he has. He issued HUD regulations to landlords saying that barring formerly incarcerated people from access to housing violates the Fair Housing Act. He changed the regulations around child support so that people don't come home from prison owing $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 in child support arrears. He banned the box on federal job applications so that formerly incarcerated job seekers have a chance to fairly compete for jobs just like anyone else.
They don't have to notify, disclose in advance that they're
He commuted the sentence of over 1,300 people, more than the last 10 presidents combined. He banned solitary confinement for juveniles in the federal system. So there's a number of concrete things that we can actually point to. But again, I think
Let's just on those concrete things for a second. Do you see those becoming precedents in the state system?
Yeah, you know, I think that that's the opposite of what happened here. I think that the appetite for doing things in D.C. around criminal justice reform actually came from a decade and a half of reform in both red and blue states around the country.
That's so interesting.
You know, that actually created a pretty safe environment for things to be happening in D.C., not as much as we all would have liked. But at the same time, you know, we have a new president coming in and there's a question of whether we'll get anything done in D.C. That's a legitimate question to ask, but I would remind people that it was the states and local municipalities that decided we can just no longer do this. We can't afford it. $80 billion a year to run prisons with the type of abysmal outcomes that we're achieving would inspire both ends of the political spectrum to say we have to do something different.
Do you see the momentum of what's happened over the last 8 years continuing?
Yeah, the question is whether or not it's the momentum we should pay attention to or the redefining of the narrative. You know, and here's where I give the Obama administration a lot of credit. It's one thing to commute the sentences of 1,300 people. That's a drop in the bucket. There's 9,000 applications for pardons and commutations. So it's a drop in the bucket. Having said that, having breakfast with people after you commute their sentence and inviting the press to come along, that is the sort of impact I think we may not be able to measure today, but one day we'll look back and realize it was actually a turning point.
So you think the visit to the prison that he actually did was one of the bigger impacts?
Look, we have a criminal justice system that operates on punitiveness and retribution. And yet if you ask most people what does our correctional system do, they talk about rehabilitation and reform and transformation and redemption. Those things no longer exist in our criminal justice system. Why? Because we've dehumanized the 70 million Americans that now have a criminal record on file, the 2.3 million Americans in prison on any given day. And so therefore, if they're not human, then we don't have to treat them like human beings. I think what the Obama administration did was to remind us that we're all fallible and that, yes, people end up in prison for making bad decisions, but that we're all human. And I think that opened up a space for people to at least start listening and paying attention. I've been doing this for a decade and a half since I exited prison myself after serving 6 years. And I got to tell you, I mean, today, you know, usually I just have to open my mouth and say I do criminal justice reform these days and people jump right in and they
really
fill the void. Whereas 5 years ago,
people
10 years
talk.
Ago, I felt like a tree in the forest. I felt as though no one was listening.
From your perspective, did the Obama administration see limits that they weren't going to confront, they weren't going to cross?
I don't think Congress was willing to hand this president a win on just about anything, even criminal justice reform, where there's actually bipartisan consensus on the need to do something. You know, that also makes me hopeful, actually, the fact that now this black president isn't in the way. People don't have to hand a win to this charismatic, relatively effective black president. And so now the hope is that there's actually a chance for not just for a bill to pass in Congress, for it to be a more meaningful bill than some of the meaningful distractions that are languishing in Congress right now. Maybe there's a chance now for Congress to come together and get something done. I would argue that the Republicans are going to want to show that the gridlock is going away, and here's a place where they can not just show that, but also work on an issue that doesn't just impact poor people of color in this country. There are many poor white Americans, the same folks that voted our president-elect into office, who would be positively impacted by us rolling back our archaic tough-on-crime policies.
Donald Trump says he's a law and order president. Is that rhetoric, or does that get in the way of the changes that you said a moment ago you were hopeful about?
I do think that rhetoric from the president can potentially roll back some of the gains that we've made over the last 8 years in particular. Having said that, there is a constituency that exists now around reform that isn't easily turned around. You know, because Obama created space for reform, because we have almost two decades now of local level reform, you actually have a pretty large constituency to push back on anything that doesn't line up with reality. So we have a criminal justice system that was built without the benefit of data and research, mostly fear-driven, mostly as a response to other failed policies, whether it be healthcare, workforce development, economic development, and so on. But now, over the last decade in particular, because the Obama administration actually opened a door for this conversation, because even the Bush administration started this conversation, there's a tremendous amount of data, there's a tremendous amount of research that has happened. And so, for instance, the president keeps banging away at this idea that violent crime is up in this country. That's absolutely untrue. Over the last two decades, violent crime has been down considerably. Here in New York, where, you know, when I was on Rikers Island 20 years ago, there were 23,000 people. Today we have 8,000 people there. And yet serious crime in New York is down at rates comparable to 1961. And that's reflected all across this country.
Well, then, since you bring up data, the Brennan Center says that 70% of the people in prison today constitute no significant threat to communities should they be released tomorrow.
So I think this is one of the biggest barriers to meaningful criminal justice reform, what you just brought up, this bifurcation of the population between violent and nonviolent. First of all, the way we went from here in New York, for instance, 12,000 people in our prisons to over 72,000 in 1992, and now we're stuck around 56,000, wasn't just because we ratcheted up punishment for nonviolent first-time offenders. We actually ratcheted up punishment for everyone. And now we have all of this data that says that lengthier sentences actually give us negative outcomes. The fact that there's like the law of diminishing returns. The longer a person stays in prison, the less chance they have of being successful once they're released. And yet we continue to do what feels politically palatable for us. And our president is guilty of that. When I met with President Obama and I had a chance to talk to him, one of the three things, one of my three talking points was specifically about him being careful not to continue to bifurcate the population. And obviously he continued to keep doing that. And
what did he say? What did he say to you?
He said, look, you know, I get this. I understand this. But we have to see what we can accomplish now and then build on top of that.
Well, so what do you say? A lot of African-Americans, when Obama was giving his inaugural speech, said in their heart of hearts, I was thinking, don't go too far. You're going to get shot. What do you say to the argument, hey, come on, Glenn, you can't push too far here?
You know, I'll say this. As someone directly impacted by the system, as someone who spent 6 years in prison and realized that we lock up some of America's best and brightest, you know, I'll point to Rockefeller drug law reform here in New York. We banged away at that for 36 years. We finally had a huge win in 2009 where we got rid of 95% of our mandatory minimum drug laws. The reason we filled up our prisons with people who should have been diverted to treatment. And we won partially because we kept telling the legislature these are nonviolent offenders. They don't belong there. The problem with that message is that it's a double-edged sword. What's behind that message is the implicit message that everyone else does belong there. And so again, you know, the question is, do you want to win the war or do you want to win the battle? And pushing for nonviolent offenders to get out and, you know, Hillary Clinton standing there saying, yes, we got to end mass incarceration by getting these nonviolent marijuana offenders out of prison. That is a joke. That low-hanging fruit has been gone a long time ago. We have to be willing to dig deeper.
What would you advise the president in a quiet moment that he should do that would help to continue the positives that you see, incomplete as they are?
I think that post-presidency, our president is going to maintain the momentum he's been able to build, the amount of access to press that he's held over the last 8 years. And I truly believe that he has to continue to create ways to humanize people who are involved in our criminal justice system. The reason we criminalize poverty and mental health and addiction and homelessness and you name it is because we have dehumanized people who are in the system. Our president has a way of doing what a very limited number of privileged Americans have done in the past, which is to recognize their privilege and align it alongside people who don't have as much privilege to help share a message about the humanity of those folks. And I think that there are some concrete policy things he can work on. Obviously, we've only been doing this for 4.5 decades. It's very clear how we got here. Mandatory minimums, truth in sentencing, three strikes laws, prison privatization. But none of those things happen if we think of people in the system as less than human.
Glenn E. Martin, president and founder of Just Leadership USA. Thanks so much.
Thank you.